to another instalment of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we're still locked down and wanting to go somewhere, anywhere, in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it looks like a return to action may very well be happening with the players returning to small group training in stage one of the phased return. Whether it is right to do so or not remains to be seen, with various players stating that they're not keen on going back. One thing we do know is that if and when they do return, the stadiums will be empty. Another thing that is empty is our studio. So it's just as well then that we have Zoom, and joining me from their sofas, bedrooms, and in our case, bathroom, is of course Alan Wares, Andy Bath, and we're delighted to welcome back Brian Owen from the Argus. Good evening, everyone. How are we all?
We're good.
Hi, Eddie. Very good, thank
good,
you.
Yeah, it's not my bathroom.
Brian, obviously, these are very strange times for you. Can you remember what it was like to go to a football match?
Yeah, I can remember. It's been busy actually. It's been a lot of what you call sports news. It's been pretty busy, certainly Monday through to Friday. Obviously, not on Saturday. But the Albion have led the way in communications, as we know, and they've had these now quite famous Thursday media sessions, which have gone on for 2 hours. They're back a bit now, a rich vein of stories, and there seems to be plenty going on. So, yeah, it's a long time, isn't it? Well, I think it's gone quite quickly, considering. Yeah.
Well, officially, it's starting on 23rd of March. So that's exactly 2 months that we've been in lockdown officially. And obviously, it does feel like a long, long time, especially when the season was getting to draw to a close. But, I mean, I just want to pick up your point there about the Albion being so media-friendly. I mean, obviously, as a member of the media pack, you're kind of on the receiving end of what the club are doing. So, in the great scheme of things, for those of us who've been on Mars, what is it the club's doing that frankly, everyone else isn't?
Well, apparently Sheffield United have been quite good, but what the Albion did fairly quickly, it was about 2 or 3 weeks, and I put a text into Paul Camden at the club saying, is there any chance of talking to Graham Potter at some stage? And I guess other people did as well. And then out of the blue, we got this email saying, press conference Thursday, and it always says, it's always on the Thursday before a game, 1:30, you know, the training complex at Lancing as the venue, and the venue was your living room or home office. And it was Zoom for many of us. It was a first ever Zoom experience. So the obviously the normal people like myself, Johnny Cantor, etc., signed up is yes, we'll be there. But what it means is for two reasons. Firstly, you don't have to travel to Lancing. And secondly, no other clubs were doing this. So everybody was there. You know, you had all the like national radio, Sky, Premier League production, some of the sort of bigger names from the national newspapers were there, and the whole thing was set up, a broadcast section. I think we had Paul Barber and Graham Potter on the first one. And so really, and it's like this, it's quite well organised in different sections, and they shut you out if it's not your turn, and you raise your hand sort of figuratively on the button.
For those that are familiar with the Zoom format, obviously you have the squares across the thing. So, I mean, is it like when you've got everyone there, is it like a football version of Celebrity Squares?
I suppose it is. There are some well-known sort of media names who turn up. And you see the ones who have been brought in as panellists, so you don't see everybody all the time. And you could just sit there and do it, and not, if you raise your hand to ask a question, they put you on the screen. And bit by bit, we've got to know how to use it, and we've had Paul Barber's done every one. Graham Potter's done about three. We've had Glenn Murray, Dan Ashworth a couple of times, Tony Bloom. We had Hope Powell yesterday. Mm-hmm. I think we've got Morning coming up. So yeah, I mean they're gold dust for me, obviously, and really useful for everybody else.
I mean, we'll get back to those
in a minute, but. First, what have you made of the radio silence from the other clubs? I mean, you mentioned Sheffield United have been quite good, but I mean, we're not really hearing an awful lot from anyone else.
No, not totally surprised, because I mean, obviously, didn't know what it was going. Initially, I assume when we got this email from Paul, I thought, right, this is what Premier League clubs are doing. This is what happens. This is the norm. And it soon became clear that it wasn't, and that they were out on their own. And people from Nationals and Talk Sport and what have you, and Sky Sports, who came on the first one, said, thanks for doing this, you're the only ones doing it. I suppose it's an extension of the culture of why talk if you don't have to? And maybe it's that sort of feeling, you know, why stop in a mix zone when you can walk through with headphones on? Why, if there's no contractual obligation to be doing press conferences now, why would you do it? But Paul Barber in particular is obviously of a very different mindset and will come out and want to communicate. Sorry,
I was going to say, if you've got Paul Barber involved, then each one is going to be 2 hours anyway, isn't it? So, but if you've got, I mean, when you've got the Zoom thing, I mean, there's the other thing about sort of everyone's getting used to this and you've now got this, you know, this, like I say, this panel of faces all asking questions of Paul Barber. I think the important thing, probably the key thing that you've all got to ask is, have you all sorted out your bookshelves in the background?
One, I don't know who it was, somebody had an array of Rothmans. He must have had three shelves with a wall of Rothmans, and that was actually commented on. As I know we noticed that Paul's got some very nice white blinds. That was my wife who spotted that, actually. So she so you do spot these things, and they sort of become part of it, and it's you know, it's quite good fun. They're quite enjoyable things, and the 2 hours just flies by. They've cut them back now. It's more like an hour, but as you say, Paul, Dan Ashworth gives quite long answers. So I think they've been interesting, and you know, they pushed the Albion's profile, I suppose, forwards as well. Annoyed some people, and other people have appreciated it.
Because since we did an Albion Raw a couple of weeks ago, sorry, Andy, I'll let you in a sec, but since we did an Albion Raw a couple of weeks ago, and we've since had it that the club have made their statements, and especially Glenn Murray, about his concern about playing in future, you know, and all the training come back. The Albion have actually become a little bit of a pariah, because for all the for the press conferences and all the things that have been said, you've got a lot of fans have actually just sort of really turned up really snotty and said, you know, well, you just don't want to go down. Of course, no one wants to go down, but the Albion are really putting their head in the noose here, aren't they?
Well,
go on, Andy. Yeah.
I was going to just say something else first, but you talk derail me there because you've actually made a really good point, and I'll talk about that. I'll address that now because I think a lot of it's been quite funny seeing some of the negative reaction to the Albion's perfectly reasonable stances and just the total misunderstanding of what our football club and our fan base is really about. I mean, I think, you know, none of us want to go down, but let's face it, if we go down, it'll be because we weren't good enough, and you know, it's not like it's not happened to us before. We'll survive and we'll carry on going and supporting the team and deal with that come what may. So I find it vaguely insulting. I think it speaks a lot more to the insecurities of those who are attacking us rather than to our own mindset. But also I found it interesting in those, the ones that Dan Ashworth was in, the press conferences that Dan Ashworth did, it kind of like, you know, drew back the curtain on like the great sort of, he's kind of like the Oz figure in the Albion. He's sort of meant to be this great sort of powerful person with this huge reputation, but no one really knows a lot about him and no one really gets to hear what he has to say. And now he's kind of been brought a little bit more into the forefront of the Albion's communications operation. And I find that interesting because, he's a serious person with very good credentials, and the sort of work that he's being asked to do is definitely more in the long term, for the long term future of the club, rather than like immediate return, even although that is part of his remit as well. But I just find it interesting that, you know, that the mystery man has finally come forward and is now, you know, there's sort of, you know, there is less mystery about him.
What have you found out about him that you didn't know? I mean, what are the parts that really kind of intrigued you? Well,
just him talking about his job, the fact that he was just there in the first place. I always thought of him as a secretive person that kept himself to himself and like in this sort of ivory tower. That was kind of like the impression I got from looking from the outside. It was like, you know, especially when things weren't going well and he was getting blamed for a lot of bad recruitment decisions, which kind of happened before he took up his job. And it turns out he's not like that at all. I mean, he's far less in, like Oz, he's far less intimidating than a presence than you thought. No, he's not the figure of fun that Oz was, but but you know, it wasn't this sort of frightening sort of mystery man sort of determined to take the club down from behind. And yeah, I just think it's interesting that he's on the roster. I mean, obviously Barber, you know, would
get him off the stage somehow.
He would be at the opening of an envelope and talk you through, you know, every single bit of the process. I mean, you know, he loves to speak and he's very interesting. And then obviously Tony would dip in and make the odd appearance. So I think it's nice that, you know, Ashworth has actually been up front. I just, you know, it gives me more confidence in where we're going forward as a club. I just feel like there's a plan. I just feel that's the impression I get, is that they've got a plan and they, whatever it is, they're sticking to it and they're not going to be deflected by it, despite this.
Yeah, Brian, have you learned anything from Dan Ashworth throughout all of this?
Just that he sort of, I suppose what Andy's saying, he sort of, in a way, is that bridge between Potter and Barber, in that it's almost in the questions that he will answer. I was slightly wondering what, you've got Graham Potter and you've got Paul Barber, and you know, one's about the team and one's about the admin. And so when Dan Ashworth was on there, I wasn't quite sure. There's a couple of questions. Should I give that to Paul Barber or should I give that to Dan? So I'll probably a bit more about his role, I guess, and just the, I suppose, the range of wisdom and experiences he's got, and also how keen national media are to talk to him, and it's probably reinforces what a sort of an important character and well-known character he's been from his past as well.
Yeah, I mean, he was the one that came up with the national ID thing for football and everything with, I was going to say Bishop Abbey there, it's St George's Park now, isn't it? But he's certainly an intriguing character. It's something we are learning on the hoof as we go.
So, just Andy, in that case, given what Andy's said about, you know, the lifting the lid slightly and like I say, pulling back the curtain, who would you like to see next? You know, because given that the Albion are going to carry on doing these weekly meet and greets almost online, who would you like to see next?
It'd be interesting to hear from one of the foreign players about how they found the lockdown. Someone also be wonderful to hear from Bruno, who, as we know, is a very eloquent gentleman and comes across amazingly well and speaks sense, and you know, and he, and as Brian knows, he's kind of like his role now is a bridge between the players and the management, and it'd be interesting to see how you know, how he's coping it in a different country when a lot of his family is still in Spain, and you know, it's the whole thing's just everything's just baffling. There's so many questions I've got to ask everyone at the club really about the whole thing, because it's like we have been at the forefront of everything, and we have been the ones to stick our head above the parapet. And what happens when you do that? You're there to get shot at. Now,
yeah, but obviously, why? Just because we're offering an opinion.
Well, that's exactly it. But that was the question I was asking Brian earlier, because the other clubs aren't doing. I mean, has anyone heard a peep out of Jurgen Klopp for the last 2 months?
Yes, actually, he's been one of the few managers that has.
Yeah. Of all and people you're going to pick,
he's been very good. Klopp's been pretty decent. So, but you haven't heard from anybody from Liverpool in a, like, you know, a manager in a, from Liverpool, the football club, you haven't heard that much. Klopp will talk because he likes talking and he's quite an affable, you know, he's an affable, down to earth kind of bloke. Who, you know, he'll again talk your ears off, but you haven't heard anything from them. You haven't really heard anything from Manchester United, you know, Arsenal or Tottenham.
Yeah. On that point, Andy.
Sorry, can you? Andy, do you think that's club policy in every case? Because let's say if Klopp likes to be a born chatterbox, why isn't he out front more? Are Liverpool gagging him?
No, I just think if someone asks him to go and speak, he'll speak.
But on that point, you mentioned Arsenal there, Andy. I mean, one person it would be really good to hear from in out of all of this is Arteta, who obviously was at the forefront of all this, because it was actually him coming out with having the virus that snowballed everyone to actually thinking actually we are going to take action immediately and everything shutting down.
Well, for once you actually have to give the football authorities some credit, because they pulled the plug before they were told to. I remember discussing with you like literally days before the fixture whether whether we were going to go or not, and we were still going to go. That was I look back on that mindset now that I think that would have probably been a irresponsible thing to have done, but luckily the actual football authorities seem to be ahead of the game here for a change, and they pulled the plug. And yeah, it would be interesting to hear what Arteta's experience was, because he was actually he actually had it, and whether there's anything that we can learn from him. I mean, you've only seen this week, obviously the Albion's been afflicted with three known cases, and Watford totally vindicating Troy Deeney's stance this week by announcing that they had some positive cases.
You were on a Premier League promotions podcast earlier this week, and you were speaking to a Watford fan. What's the story up there?
Well, I mean, the situation with Troy Deeney is, he's got a young child who's got breathing difficulties, and is quite at risk. The situation is this. I mean, we look at footballers, they are seen as being on this pedestal. Everyone looks at their wage packets rather than what's behind that. And at the end of the day, all of these players, they've got the same feelings, the same emotions as everyone else. And they've all got families. And, and Deeney's come out and said, but I don't want to go in to and put myself at risk and come back and bring something that could seriously affect my child. Yeah. Glenn Murray said something similar. It's not so much, these guys, the young, fit guys, there's no guarantee that they're not going to get it. We've already seen other players be affected with it. And basically, the Watford guy I was speaking to, he was, everyone's very much in favour of what Troy Deeney's saying. And he was saying that, at the end of the day, if he doesn't feel it's safe to go back, then he's not going to go back. And, he will be a big miss. He's a talisman for them. They're in the danger zone. They've pulled themselves out of the bottom three at the moment, but, they've got some big fixtures to come. And he would be a big miss. But at the end of the day, the human cost is much bigger. And we said this on the show the other day, all the time that people are still dying, football's not important.
Well, you got to the point that, with the stuff that Glenn Murray's been saying and Troy Deeney and others have been saying, you got to this point that the counter-argument comes back from fans of certain clubs. And let's face it, we're talking about clubs who have a much bigger agenda about finishing the season in the position that they want to finish. They're saying that, one, footballers are in a very low risk. Well, we don't know that. Secondly, have been on £3 million a year or whatever it might be doesn't make you immune to a virus. And quite rightly, as it's been pointed out, that, they're not automatons. They're, yes, they're on a pedestal, but they're not automatons. They are humans. They have families. And it's this kind of mentality, Andy, that we were talking about just now, this mentality of football at all costs, and that cost can sometimes be, the lives of people across society. Can you get your head around this attitude?
No, I can't. I mean, it's what we discussed on the last pod, and I think we were pretty much universally in agreement that we didn't think it was right. It was the right time for us to pursue restarting the season. It still seems unseemly to me. I think it seems more practicably possible now, having watched what happened last week at the Bundesliga, and I did watch some of that, so we can maybe talk about that. I just think, for me, this season isn't that important now. Too much has happened.
Kind of an anti-season.
I'm kind of, next season, I can definitely get invested in that. starting again, you know, maybe with some uncertainty sort of removed and a, you know, clearer picture of what is happening in society as a whole. But just trying to, like, you know, shoehorn this, you know, the remnants of this season, and it's still a substantial bit of it. It's like 9 or 10 games. So it's not, you know, it's not like, oh, we've only got a couple of games to go.
It's all the same.
Resolve some issues. That would be fair enough. But actually, you know, 9 or 10 games is you know, things can change it, you know, in that time. So we're a long way from resolving most of the issues, other than the destination of the Premier League title, which is pretty much done.
Busted, yeah.
But as far as relegation from the Premiership is concerned, that is nowhere near done and dusted. As far as promotion from the Championship and the playoffs, that's nowhere near done and dusted either. I'm not too au fait with what's going on in Leagues 1 and 2, I'm ashamed to say, but I imagine that those issues are yet to be solidly resolved either. So
League 1's even tighter.
Yeah.
Teams that play by 1 point or something.
So, there's a lot of serious decision, you know, a lot of serious outcomes to happen in a totally artificial, way. Really float my boat at all.
Okay, Brian, with that in mind, then, obviously the period of inactivity. I mean, a lot of the players have. This is the longest period of inactivity they've had in their entire careers. Yeah. Particularly someone like Glenn, who's been on the treadmill for quite some time. You know, to restart again, and they want to go back. You know, there's going to be no friendlies, and they want everyone to hit the ground running. I mean, how do you see this playing out? Do you think it should restart?
I listened to the show you did that I was invited onto and couldn't get onto, and I was quite glad I didn't get on it because the chat was so good about what you were saying about so being so uneasy about coming back, and it didn't feel right. And I sort of agreed with everything you said. It does feel a little bit unreal. But now the Germans have started, it sort of shows what can happen. But this thing has been in the back of my mind. I even mentioned it to Tony Bloom in one of the press things. Is it's not coming back to fulfilled fixtures, is it? These could be some of the most important, certainly from, say, from Brighton, just to Brighton's point of view, some of the most important games for years with this project that they're trying to build and the Premier League status at stake. Who knows what it's going to be like? I mean, what will the matches be like? I don't know. Obviously, Brighton have fought hard and led the fight to play on your own stadium. But I've just been reading the piece from the St. Pauli coach who says it doesn't matter whether you're playing home or away, which sort of tallies what Uwe Hoenemaa was saying to me when I rang in last Sunday. I still have this feeling that it's uncomfortable with it, and let's see if it happens. There still seems to be things that could happen, particularly with when training becomes more serious, contact, that it could all cave in, as it did very quickly and rightly so when Mikel Arteta probably did everybody a favour in a way by testing positive.
Do you think that when they do come together again and on a physical basis, that there's going to be something subconsciously that is going to hold them back because they don't want to maybe go in as hard as they possibly were previously because they don't want to quite catch it?
But there didn't seem to be, from what I can, what I understand. I didn't watch any full games in the German league, just listened to it on the radio, and what I could see, and a picture of saw a picture of Marcus Suttner flying in studs up with in a challenge. But there didn't
that
seem,
can't be right.
I understand. Oh, I've got the photo, so I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, I don't think that would, that's one thing that Uwe said to me when I rang him. He said, when the game started, there was nothing. It just felt totally normal. The only thing he said, I don't know if you read the piece, is that they were away to Fortuna Dusseldorf, who hit the post twice in a space of a few minutes. And he said, if that had been a normal away game, then that would have changed the momentum. The crowd would have been up there. The home players would have been up for it. And that didn't happen. It was like that shot hit the post. It could have gone 10 yards wide. It's gone. And they didn't build on it. And I think, was it Paul Barber was mentioning as well, that perhaps without crowds firing people up and there might be less, that might explain why there might be less tackles or might be a bit less frenetic. No, it might even suit Brighton. Who knows in this that sort of game?
Yeah.
Interesting. Hang on, Aidan. It's just kind of interesting. Earlier today, I was because the Albion obviously putting a lot of old DVDs up on YouTube, and I was watching. I didn't realise it was that long. It's an hour and three quarters. The review of the 2011-2012 season, which is our first at the Amex, is very, very good. And there was a lot of more stuff and a lot more detail there than I thought there was going to be. And they were specifically talking about the Burnley game, the one where we had two people sent off in the first 10-15 minutes. Then up comes the Great Escape, and you know, Kieran Trippier gets that goal for Burnley. Great, good for him. It was Trippier, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Trippier.
He gets the goal for them, and then Mikal Smith fluffs his chances at the end. But the point is the kind of, the weird thing is that Gus Poyet and all the others were saying just how amazing the fans can be if they want to be and how much it's lifted. I mean, Poyet himself was saying the fans should never underestimate the effect they can have on the players if they really want to. And I think this is like, you know, gets to the point you're making. It might be great that the Bundesliga can get back into them playing their games, albeit, you know, the slightly artificially of having it in front of no one. But the thing that concerns me next about it is that if we're going to do that here, and it's still a big if, and I think that, you know, the timetable still needs to be sorted out yet, is that one thing I believe hasn't happened is the Premier League ratifying that all games from here on in will be behind closed doors. In other words, I don't think they've decided fully. They've decided what not to do, but what they have, you know, I'm not sure they've decided this. And I think this also might be a thing of why a lot of people haven't received their season ticket refunds, because it has not been ratified by the Premier League. Perhaps, Brian, I don't know if you can correct me on that.
But this was the point when I was talking to the Watford fella earlier. This is one of the things we were talking about, because, I mean, I was saying that, okay, I mean, he made this point about, yeah, with, you know, one of the last games we saw, we beat Liverpool. It was the whole of Vicarage Road was buzzing, and, you know, we're still talking about it. And I said, yeah, and, you know, that was an all-conquering Liverpool team who'd not been beaten this season, and the crowd got behind you. You know, when Liverpool come to the Amex, we're not gonna have that incentive. It's just exactly the same as when Man City went to Norwich and lost 5-2. You know, Carrow Road was rocking, and, you know, and it's those sort of atmospheres. And, you know, us against Man United, us against Spurs, it was, you know, against Arsenal, it was absolutely, the crowd was literally the 12th man, and it was very, very pivotal.
And it usually goes wilder for the bigger clubs. It goes, you know, because, you know, the gap is obviously bigger. You know, it's difficult to get excited when you're playing Norwich. But the crowd can make the difference. And this is what worries me is that if you're going to have this notion of playing behind closed doors, it still hasn't been ratified yet, I don't think, unless you know or heard anything better, Brian.
Well, the way Paul Barber's talking, it is. I mean, he's talking, we now know that every game will be behind closed doors. I must admit, I don't have a ticket, obviously, but I thought the refunds had been triggered, and weren't some people, you know, allowing money to stay with the club?
I think there's a few people saying they haven't had their money back. That was all. So, I haven't.
Obviously, I don't buy a ticket, but I mean, as far as the club are concerned, they're all behind closed doors.
Fair enough.
And yeah, I think the government say as well, you know, from June the 1st you can play, but not with a crowd. So I don't think that. I think the more the case is, will next season be behind closed doors? That's more a question.
I'm part of the email ring with the Football Supporters Association, and I get sort of their notifications quite often about what's happening with all aspects of certainly coronavirus, and before that, all safe standing and all various aspects that, you know, supporters actually really campaign about. I noticed Norwich City were pretty hot on the heels of the Albion when it came to offering refunds and what have you. But, it's just kind of curious, because I was reading something today from Amanda Jacks, who is the FSA's legal advisor, and she was saying that because there is no... it hasn't been set in stone about the behind closed doors thing, then that is actually going to affect whether, now that might be other clubs and the Albion are jumping ahead of it and saying, right, we're going to give you your money back anyway, so hopefully it's that, but they haven't ratified it yet, and she was actually getting quite cross about the lack of, you know, all the lack of movement on that score. So here's hoping it's all going to sort itself out soon, but I think it's going to be an assumption that it will be behind closed doors, because I don't think there's any way forward.
Andy?
Yeah, I mean, on the subject of playing behind closed doors, and I think the Premier League will restart now. I think last weekend went well enough for them to have some sort of a template to use. And I thought, okay, I'm going to sit down and watch this. It's utterly bizarre. I watched a bit of the Korean thing the weekend before, which was diabolical. And you know, it was Dortmund Schalke, so it was a game that would normally have quite a lot in it. It's a massive derby. You know, one of our good friends, Mr. Paul John, is a big Schalke fan. I'm not entirely sure how much of this game he would have put himself through watching, because Schalke just seemed to be isolating themselves from the ball quite a lot. But Dortmund actually turned up, and the first 10 minutes or so were pretty odd. And I thought, this is fairly rubbish. Again, like the Korean thing, I just thought, it looks like a practice match. It doesn't. But Dortmund were much keener to win the game. Yeah. And once they got going, I thought, this is bizarre, but it's entertaining. This is, you know, as someone who doesn't have a rooting interest in the game, objectively, it was nice football to watch. And the first, in fact, all four of the goals were really nice. Lovely opening goal from Haaland. The second goal, I think it was a Aguero or something. What a finish that was. And I found myself watching that game for an awful lot longer than I imagined I actually would. And I was thinking, I was having a discussion with some other friends today, and who didn't watch it. And I said, what was it like? I said, well, it was all right. You know, it wasn't terrible. I was expecting it to be flipping awful, and it wasn't. It was entertaining. But am I going to watch 38 games of that?
No chance.
Yeah. I'll be in the garden or down the beach or on the downs or doing something else instead.
Yeah. Now, Brian, obviously, as part of your job, you do watch an awful lot of football, and a lot of them, the games you watch it particularly with the age group teams, they might as well be behind closed doors. There's no atmosphere. You can hear exactly what the players are saying. I mean, can you imagine that for the first team, every game? It just seems to be...
No, I can't imagine it. It's going to be... We don't know what it's going to be like until we get there, do we? And also, I don't even know if I'll be there. I mean, the German games had 10 newspaper reporters at each one. So it might not even be that I would be there. But if I was... I suppose you'd have to keep... It's hard to know without having done it. But I suppose, in a way, you'd have to keep telling yourself this really counts. This is a big Premier League game. But it's hard to know. I mean, like I say, I spoke to Hunamani. He said it just felt like a normal game. You don't notice it. But it's
really?
Yeah. He said he just got stuck. Maybe you don't notice it's competitive. Do you know what I mean? It's not. It doesn't feel like a friendly as such. When they arrived at the stadium.
That is very encouraging to hear, though, because I think if the players have that mentality, then you might get a slightly more honest competition on the pitch.
Yeah. They're training every day without fans, right?
Yeah, so. They are. And professional sportsmen are unbelievably competitive. Occasionally I've managed to see a training session, or even I think if they play each other at table tennis or whatever, they're unpleasantly competitive in a way. I can never be like that myself. I mean, I've seen I remember years ago we went to the pre-season in France, and this was like third division players. They had a friendly competition at the end, so-called, and even club staff joined in, and Johnny Byrne joined in because he was there, and the media staff. And the players were on the losing side. Were almost I remember Alex Frutos looked like he'd lost the World Cup final when he'd... lost that game. They are like that. I think they are incredibly competitive. So I wouldn't worry about that. I mean, physically, how's it going to be? How are they going to be? Again, I spoke to a captain of a Bundesliga team, so it's quite valuable information. So yeah. He said he was absolutely exhausted on the Saturday after they played, but by the Sunday morning, he felt okay. Now, they've got a weekend of matches coming up. They've also got a midweek round, Tuesday, Wednesday coming up. And then next Saturday, Sunday, I know that Uwe plays against Dortmund and Zoutner plays against Bayern. So again, that'll be from the physical point of view. He said the five substitutes made a difference. He thought that was a really good innovation. We don't know if that's going to happen in the Premier League yet, but he thinks that was really a good decision to take that on board.
It can't happen in this season.
Yeah. Can it? Well, it's happened in Germany.
Well, but you know, if for us to finish the season, it's got to be, you know, it's like taking away VAR now. You can't change the rules halfway through the season.
They didn't take away VAR in Germany. There was still annoying VAR this week.
If you're talking about the spirit, you know, the spirit of it, and dare I say integrity of a competition, but that sort of thing. But it can happen. It has happened, and the Germans have done it, and most of them have used their five substitutes in their games last weekend.
I mean, there's one aspect of a behind closed door thing that's specifically important to us as fans, and clearly in Germany, or it wasn't reported in Germany, there was an issue of fans turning up outside the stadium, because, you know, behind closed doors means that you're not going to get to watch the game. And there is a fear from the safety groups or the safety advisory groups. And I personally think it's a little bit insulting. I think it's a little bit disingenuous to say that, you know, if we're effectively guilty until proven innocent, that there will be English fans turning up to the stadium of choice. And it's not even the whole thing about the neutral venues. It's this, they'll turn up and, you know, gather outside the stadium with the forlorn hope of getting in to watch these games. And like I say, it wasn't reported in Germany, or if there was an issue, it wasn't reported, that fans gathered. But I think this assumption that fans in England will do so, I think it's actually a bit naughty to assume that that's going to be the case.
I don't think people will.
For the most part, no.
Well, yeah, what's the point? I mean, you're successful, you get invited, but everyone's, what is it? There's nothing in it for fans. You're not going to be able to see anything. You'll just be standing outside the ground, and you're going to get, you know, you're going to get taken to task for doing so.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
That's the point. Okay. Well, let's leave that. I'm still trying to get over the fact that Brian just said Alex Frutos and World Cup final in the same sentence. It's beyond me. But you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Now, we are sponsored, as usual, by the wonderful oldfootballshirts.com. Over 108,000 jerseys of all colours and shapes and sizes. It's quite a wondrous thing. And actually, there's been a wonderful thread over on Norstad Chat this week where Phil's been pretty much holding court with everyone who's got a question about any sort of football shirt, really. But I have got a shirt of the week for you. I'm just going to hold this up to the camera here. If you can see it, I'll do it on the phone, guys. But okay. Can you see that?
Pull it back a little bit.
Yeah, I know who that is.
All right, okay. Well, Brian, do you want to have a go? Before Andy lets the cat out of the bag, do you want to describe that, Brian?
Yes, it's stripes. It's orange. Looks like sort of an orange and yellow. The sponsors are DB in red and white on the front. It's Nike, and it's a sort of there's a blue badge I can't really see very well. And it's got short sleeves.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay. Actually, Adi, can you keep the camera thing up? So orange. Oh, there's a blue. Oh, the badge appears to be a blue flag, like it's safe to go into the water, kind of thing.
Yeah, orange and sort of, is it orange and yellow? Would you say?
It looks like
the printer wasn't great, to be fair. So,
all right, so please tell me it's not supposed to be red.
It's actually purple,
it won't be red.
But it's more.
Yeah, go on then, Andy. Put us out of our misery. Who is it?
If I'm not mistaken, that's Hertha Berlin.
You would be absolutely correct in
that. I've got it by the flag, but I know there's no way I was going to get it by the shirt.
Yeah. So not an awful lot on this one today, but this is the 2013-14 third shirt of German Bundesliga side Hertha Berlin. Hertha Berliner Sport, commonly known as Hertha Berlin, is a German professional football club who are based in the Charlottenburg locality of Berlin. They were formed in 1892 as BFC Hertha. BFC Hertha 92, taking its name from a steamship with a blue and white smokestack. and one of the four young men who founded the club had taken a day trip on this ship with his father. The name Herta is a variation on Nerthus, referring to fertility goddess from the Germanic mythology, which is...
Is this true, Brian?
I'm not sure. I'm amazed. It's not only a Herta Berlin shirt, it's a third team, a third short shirt.
Phil's always doing this to us.
Wait, I'm talking to Andy. That's very impressive. What, from 5 years ago as well?
Yeah, quite.
The badge is quite well known. I mean, basically, the Herta, the Herta shirt is it's commonly seen in Brighton shirt circles because their home colours are blue and white stripes. So, and their kits are made with Nike, and it's like quite often with their shirts, just have a look and see what you could have won. And but yeah, I mean, Herta, I mean, they're a club with great history. In fact, I mean, during the war years, they were one of the, they were playing at the Brand, at the Berlin Brandenburg Gates and stuff. It was
talking of football shirts, as we were, thank you very much indeed for that, Phil. Did anyone see, I think it was on Facebook and certainly on Twitter, a good friend of ours, Tom Clark, putting up some concept shirts for the Albion. Anyone see these?
Because I retweeted.
Some of them, some of them look pretty good.
Okay, I mean, we'll just describe what we're talking about here. We're effectively, I think he's gone onto some computer program and done the first shirt pretty much in the same style as the Cup Final shirt. So it's blue with red and white pinstripes and obviously an Amex, and it looks very nice. And then there's an away version he's done with white with red and blue pinstripes. Some people have said, no, it's red and blue equals Crystal Palace, can't have it that way. And then there's a third shirt,
which has got a
picture of the Palace pier on it. And it works really well. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be against...
That is definitely two Palace.
Sorry?
I like the...
That is definitely two Palace.
Like, sort of grey, it was like herring gold colours.
Yes.
That was quite nice.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen it, go on to look for Tom Clark and look at these concept shirts. I think they're wonderful.
We'll retweet it again and stuff, but yeah, it is wonderful. I mean, that's again football kits and things like that. I mean, what's going to happen? Is there going to be new shirts next year? The club's going to be looking for any way to create some sort of income if they haven't got the turnstiles cooking, but.
I don't think any of us at the moment can look to the start of the next season just because we don't know what's happening this season.
No.
I mean, we could put across any theories that say, okay, this season's going to finish at the end of August. We'll start the new one at the beginning of October and we'll just concertina it a bit, do away with the League Cup, shorten the European shorten the European programme. So that then there's not such a fixture pile-up. And there are ways of doing it. But even then, you think, OK, right, well, we'll set ourselves a deadline of August by finish the season. And we've got no way of knowing that's going to happen. So, you know, the whole notion of what's going to happen next season. Well, assuming there is going to be a next season, what's going to happen this season?
Well, that is what has frustrated me about this whole palaver, trying to come up with ever more elaborate, you know, ways of, yeah, getting these last 9 or 10 games done, is that we could be spending this time planning for a new season, whether it's abridged or not. I would certainly suggest abridged just to play safe in terms of like reducing the logistics of the new season and maybe starting it in September rather than August, but giving yourself plenty of time and plenty of certainty so you can actually plan it properly, because it's a long time between now and like September, and like, you know, and you know, when you're in lockdown world, next week feels like it's 2 months away. You know, so I mean, there is plenty of time, and the situation will be, you know, the situation will be different one way or the other, but you know, for good or ill, the situation should be clearer by then. But and then you can move forward and make more concrete decisions. But having watched what happened last week in Germany, you know, the Bundesliga handled it very well. You know, I have to say they handled it very well. It went as well as could be expected, and it showed that it could be done, even if it's slightly unsatisfying in terms of for me in terms of competitive sport. I mean, you know, big derby game last week, Dortmund Schalke. Dortmund absolutely bossed it, but you know, how are their fans going to celebrate it? You know, just
one thing it does do is reduces the lawyers getting involved, and this is what worries me most of all, because every single twist and turn, there is no perfect answer just because we have so many unknowns at the moment. But every single twist and turn leaves yourself open to litigation, and by which time, you know, by the time the lawyers take over, then that's it. It's going to suck the last resources out of football. So, you know, I do understand why they are trying to force an issue, but let's do it right.
It'll be interesting to see how we react when it is the Albion versus Arsenal in the first replayed game, the first sort of behind closed doors game, and whether I feel differently about it watching my own team, because I don't support anybody in the Bundesliga, yeah. So I don't really, you know, I mean, you know, maybe Union, but you know, I don't really mind Hertha either. That game's actually going on right now. But I say the Berlin team's quite nice, but I don't know. It's sort of, I thought, you know, it was okay to watch it, but I just, there's no way, if you're going to say the 2021 season is going to be behind closed doors, just wake me up when it's over. I'm just going to find something else better to do.
Yeah.
Brian, talking to a Premier League club or rather them talking to everyone else on such a regular basis, do you get an inkling of a solution can be found?
I think so, yeah. Can be found. I mean, they seem determined to find. When you mentioned about the League Cup, Carabao Cup, I think that might be more difficult to... That might not be so straightforward just to get rid of that. I think when I've spoken to Paul Barber a couple of times, he's stressed the importance of that, more so to the lower division clubs, and how they'll be keen to do what they can for the lower division clubs. And that's not necessarily going to be giving money, because they're obviously Brighton losing money as well. But it could be, yes, we'll still play the Carabao Cup. So I think that's not just a straight, yeah, get rid of the Carabao Cup, easy as that. That's not as easy.
Fair enough. Yeah.
They obviously think. I mean, I asked Paul Barber, "What's your?" You know, he gives us the facts and the figures and what people are saying and this. And I said, "What's your gut feeling, then, Paul?" And he said, "He just goes one day, one extreme, one day the next." And I think that was when he said that he was haunted, which is a word that I used in a big headline by what was going on in the country. And from a personal point of view, touch wood, been very lucky not to be affected, you know, by the virus, any friends, colleagues, anybody, friends of friends, family, anybody. And I think maybe you see things differently then, but obviously there's, you know, huge stuff going on in the country. And I think that's, I don't know, I think they even struggle to talk about football in these press sessions and matches being played and league formats and which cups go to one leg and no replays and what have you. And then when we talk about the structure as well, I've got no clue what's going on with European competitions, which have to be fitted in as well. FA Cup's still there. So I think there's, all we're talking is about getting the Premier League finished. So sort of to cut it short, I think there is, they think it can be done, but really, you know, they'll do all they can to get it done, but really, who knows?
But the thing is, I mean, we've all spoken about it at length, and we've done it on here and on other shows as well. But the most of the supporters of other clubs that I've spoken to, they're not particularly in any particular rush. They're not overly keen on it recommencing, because you know this is, like I said this earlier in the show, this is the longest gap that these players will have ever had in their careers. This is longer than they have at pre-season. When it does reconvene, you know, any momentum's gone. Players that were on a losing streak, that was like practically last season. Now we're in a different thing. No one I've spoken to is, apart from the Liverpool who want to tie up the title, and apart from the teams that want to get promoted out of the Championship and out of League One, etc. It's all about it just feels a little bit dirty to me. It just seems to be more about. The show I was doing for PLP today, it was, I asked the question and the question got pulled because it was criticising the Premier League and about the situation.
Or ask it now then, mate.
Well, all it was basically, is it the Premier League that's actually driving this to get it finished? Because it's like, all we want is for everyone to be safe and us to get back to it in a normal fashion as possible. And, you know, football without fans is nothing. We've said it before and we'll say it again.
Well, you have to remember, go on, Andy, go on.
Well, football without fans, you know, is nothing. I mean, it's...
Well, it's a kickabout.
I've watched two fanless games in 2 weeks, and yeah, it's mildly diverting, but it's not. I mean, I'd rather watch an old Albion review of the season thing, like the 2011-2012 thing, and we got the We Are On Our Way video coming.
Harry's Heroes, Andy. That's where it's at. Harry's Heroes.
I'm not watching anything with Redknapp.
Enjoy.
I'd rather watch those things and like remember what it was like and remember those experiences that we had following the team, because whatever happens with the end of this particular season, we're not going to be part of it. We're on the sidelines, almost literally. Mm. And it's an empty experience. I think for the end of this season, I think because we have got a relegation battle, so the games will mean something. So we will have an interest, and I think we could sustain that over a 6 week period or whatever, a bit of interest. But could you spend 9 months watching that on your TV?
Well, I was talking to Gary Dicker the other day. I was talking to Gary Dicker the other day, the show of which is still available on our YouTube channel. Go and have a look at a show of our years. But Gary was basically saying that he wasn't particularly keen to go back as a player. And we were talking about what was going to happen in the SPL. Well, they've now pulled it. They've called time on the season. They've given Celtic the league. Hearts have been relegated, which Gary thought was going to be a bit of an issue with Hearts being one of the bigger teams in Scotland. But they've done it. That for me is the correct decision.
Well, it's that's. I mean, therein lies the point. Is that what is the right way forward? I mean, there is the notion that Netherlands, France, and now Scotland have said, "That's it. We're canning the season. That's it. No more." The Bundesliga are giving it a go. The Premier League want to give it a go, but the whole notion of in terms of keeping a football match going or a programme of football fixtures going, then behind closed doors has to be seen as being acceptable. It's just that football as sport, it's okay, but football as business, football as entertainment, football as the social institution that it is, it's a bit like going to the crowd being there is part of the interaction. It's a bit like going to a comedy gig and no one there. It's a bit like going to you going and seeing the Wild Hearts AD and no one's there.
That will never happen.
Well, there'll be always be you, of course.
If Ginger is allowed to doing a show online.
but I would like to point out here that playing games behind closed doors is something that UEFA hand out as a punishment.
I think that we've got to look at that in a different context now. We have no choice but to look at that in a different context. Because we do. Go on, Brian.
It will keep some people in jobs as well, if the whose jobs do rely on these football matches being played. Okay, yeah. Know myself, maybe, but there will be people who, or if they're kept in jobs, or it keeps their wages, or they don't have to be furloughed, or whatever. So it will make a difference.
Yeah. Okay. So it's. Okay, well, we're getting towards the end of the show. Let's do a quick once round. I'll go with you first, AD. Here we are now. We're recording this May 22nd. We're looking at a June 8th, the earliest return. Is it going to happen? And would you be satisfied, given all the options that are on the table right here, right now, with behind closed doors as a way of finishing the season? Or do you want to just cut it now?
Cut it now. Just cut it now. There's people's like, it's not just the players, it's the backroom staff, it's everyone else. All the time, the people, I said again, all the time people are dying, football's not important. Let's get the country safe and healthy first, and let's not use the players as some sort of like performing monkey, just because it's not about like raising the morale of the country. It's about the Premier League getting the bang for their buck, probably. So, you know, we want to see our team again. We want to go back. We want the players to get back out on the pitch again. We want the players to be, ultimately, we want them to be happy that they are in a safe environment. And all the time, we can't guarantee that.
Okay, Andy, same question to you, mate.
Will it happen? Yes, I'm pretty sure it will happen. Do I think they should cut the season?
Is it satisfactory?
Now? Is it satisfactory for me? No, but if they're going to do it, I'll watch it.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we're all watching it because we're desperate to watch our team.
I think the Bundesliga. But is it satisfactory? I think no, it just isn't. I'm saying that now. I may change my mind later on as the season develops.
Especially if we beat Arsenal 6-0.
Well, yeah, that would be, but still, but, you know, I'll just be sat here on the sofa on my own, just going nuts. But
last word to you then, Brian.
It's still a long time. I think if they do play, it'll be late June, which is still some way off. I feel at the moment uncomfortable about it, but I've agreed pretty much with everything Andy said about this. Things changed last weekend. I think it will probably go ahead, and I think feelings will change week on week, and we're still talking about 5 weeks away. So,
yeah.
That's probably all I'm going to say.
I mean, by that time, we could be in a lot better situation, like, in terms of the country.
It won't be till then. It won't be whatever you said, 8th of June. It will be...
But the bottom line is, it's all about... Let's just think about the players' safety first and foremost, and then worry about everything else. Because at the end of the day, we want a fair conclusion to it, and I'm not seeing anything that's going to be... if we got relegated because in these circumstances, I would take it because we'd lost the matches. But, you know, as I said at the top of the show, the likes of Liverpool going to Watford and losing, the like Man City going to Norwich and losing and having those big crowds behind them, that is something which I would see as a disadvantage. And, you know, you don't want to change the rules halfway through the season. You want to see... You want to see it played out in the same spirit as it was back in August when it started, and finish in the same manner. But I mean, obviously the situation is unprecedented. Yeah. But the bottom line is we just want everyone to stay fit and healthy. And I think that's a good place to leave it, because we want you to be fit and healthy. And I just want to say thank you very much to Alan Ware. Thank you to Andy Bass. Thank you to Brian Owen. I've been AD Pack, and this has, of course, been the Albion Raw. Lots of content over on our YouTube channel. We're going to keep some of those coming up soon. I hope to do a new one this week. But we'll see you soon. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Dominic, Dominic, why are you stalling? Don't you hear love calling to you? Move, move, move your little foot, do. Dominic, Dominic, pick one and take her. There's acres and acres to choose. Oh, oh, only a fool would refuse. If I had your trouble, life would be double good sweet. There'd be no grass growing under my feet. Listen, Dominic, Dominic, when will you hunger? You ain't getting younger, my friend. Love, love, love 'em all right to the end. I can't understand you leaving them beauties forlorn. It's time to take the old bull by the horn. Come on, Dominic, Dominic. They're itching and twitching. Better start pitching some move, move.